Hello, listeners. We are back again on Quote Unquote with KK. We have changed our programming calendar this month because we have got a very interesting thought leader on our show who is visiting India and has an Indian connection. He is Eric Johnson, a senior editor at GOC. He covers technology, analysis of technology impact on global logistics and trade. Eric talks to us on many of our startups in the logistics space. We happened to interact with Eric about 3 years back when he covered one of our startups called ShipWaves, which is a digital freight forward from India. And he actually put it along with Flexport, which is a Google Venture funded company, in his analysis. And I really thank Eric. Eric's Indian connection is that he has his significant half from India. So he understands India very well. From the point of view, Eric studied at the University of Wisconsin and did his Master's of International Business from University of Leeds. He has worked with several journals and industry and has spent almost 13 years with American shippers in variety of roles. Most recently, he was covering, again, logistics and tech. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to just roll back before we start talking with Eric. Last year in our season one, we had two very significant thought leaders who talked about the situation in COVID. We had Parag Khanna, who talked about the Indo-China trade relations and the Belt and Road initiatives and how things could be disrupted between India and China from a political as well as economic relation. Next, we had Dr. Jagdish Sheth, who talked about the supply chain constraints, shortages, and other issues that the industry will face once we go out of COVID. And I'm sure we have seen that during the last 1 year of COVID lockdowns. We had shortages of oxygen, we had shortages of intermediates, chemicals, and several other requirements from a supply chain point of view from China. Also, we had various issues of disruption from containers coming from China to India, and then they getting fed in from here onwards to the rest of the world. So logistics industry has had a lot of disruptions. Today, I'm going to be provoking a lot of these issues with Eric, who understands just not the global perspective, but also India at large. So welcome to our podcast show, Eric. I'm glad to have you once again speaking to you on our podcast show.
Thank you so much, Capo, for inviting me. I'm really delighted to be here and talking to your audience today.
To set the context, what are the industry challenges that you're seeing in the whole logistic industry at this point in time, and how is it gearing up to meet the needs of the industry?
That's a big question. This has been 2020, 2021 have been historically difficult years, I think, for the global logistics industry. It's not just the pandemic. We've seen a whole bunch of massive disruptions that in any other year would have been a big story unto themselves, but layered on top of the pandemic, they've been all the more prominent. And I think what we've started to see is that logistics has started to enter the consciousness of the common person, because they now, after 2020 and 2021, really understand the connectedness between where goods come from and goods being available to them either through a website or at their local store or at a large departmental store, right? So, you know, I think from industry challenges, it's very hard to say that everyone faces the same challenges, right? It's a very segmented industry. It's very regionalized around the world. India has very different characteristics and challenges and opportunities than North America or South America. But I would say the one general issue is that there are three streams of things that run in parallel. There are the goods themselves. Then there's the data around those goods. And then there's the finance, the money that's connected to those goods. And all three of those things sort of are running at the same time in parallel, but they aren't very well connected. And they historically have not been very well connected. And I think the more we can, you know, as an industry, start to connect those better, the better we're able to kind of cope with some of the disruptions that we've seen over the past year and a half.
Eric, I want to take a little bit challenges between India, China and the disruptions, and which is also leading to the cost of goods to the final user as well. Let me just give you an example. In the medical or the pharmaceutical, the intermediate costs because of the disruptions in the supply chain have shot up by almost 100%, more than 100%. Similarly, I would see that happening across other industries as well. You know, metals, we have seen a huge spike up in prices. and have you. How do you think the logistic players across the value chain need to step up, or else we are going to see a huge inflationary trend across all countries globally if the logistic industry does not step up?
So this is actually an issue that's really getting a lot of attention in the US, which is where I'm normally based. I've been in India for the past 3 or 4 weeks and hearing a lot of the same discussions really across regions now. So it's a good question. I think the question you're sort of getting at is, to what extent the systems that are in place to move goods from one part of the world to another, to what extent are the pressures on those systems creating a rise in the cost of components and the things that make up raw materials, the things that make up the goods that we need, or the industrial products that, you know, our economies are really reliant upon? I think it varies, right? I think we need to segment a couple things. I think we need to think about, what are the essential items in our respective economies without which we can't do, right? Things like chips, microchips, which have obviously gotten a lot of attention, you know, metals, you know, those kind of raw material commodities that go into so many things that power our lives, versus consumer products, which for the most part, you know, outside of food, outside of a few things that we need day to day, toilet paper, those sorts of things, they're luxury items, right? They're things that we want to buy and like to buy, and they power a lot of the economy. But the logistics pressures on those things, I think, need to be segmented from the pressures that are on the things that society and economies absolutely have to have. So what I would say is, logistics systems probably need to do as a whole a better job of prioritizing the things that our economies need versus the things that our economies like to have and that provide a lot of economic activity, but aren't as, you know, they aren't as important as powering the power plants that make factories run, right? They aren't as important as powering the things that make our societies run. So I think that had been, to a certain extent, deprioritized in recent times. Everything runs really smoothly when there's no pandemic and when there's no major disruption. It's only in the last year or so that we've seen what can happen when there's a major disruption and how it impacts all sorts of categories of goods.
Eric, I want to shift gears a little bit to the topic of logistics and tech. Obviously, you introduced that there is a lot of metadata around the goods that go through the whole logistics system.
Yep.
And obviously, for that data to be analyzed, to be used for the purpose of all the players in the value chain, how do you think the overall value chain in the logistics industry has been disrupted?
Well, one thing we've seen, so I've been covering technology in logistics for about the last decade, covering the space as a whole for about 2 decades, and the last half of that focusing mostly on technology. So one thing I'll say is, this industry is very gradual in terms of its adoption of technology. It takes a long time for it to sort of adapt to an idea, invest in it, and that becomes the norm. But we've certainly seen an acceleration of that in the last year and a half. Almost every single company I talk to that has a technological component, whether it's a digital intermediary like Shipwaves, whether it's a pure software provider, whether it's a marketplace, they've all told me they've seen huge uptake over the last year and a half, which makes sense. Everybody's been working in remote environments. In some cases, I think people have seen this as a sort of tabula rasa to, you know, redraw processes that didn't work in a pandemic world. So I think, you know, to a certain extent, this has been the time where we've seen all of this talk about technology kind of get accelerated. But, you know, the main problem in logistics is that historically it's been seen as a cost center and not necessarily a value center. And that means that for most people in logistics, budget to invest in technology has been hard to come by. So that's over the years, that's created a mindset of kind of caution, taking a very long time to decide on things, being very, very methodical in what they decide to use. And then once they invest in something, they tend to use it a long time, sometimes past its usefulness date, right? Or sometimes they don't move to something new. I think that's starting to change now. I see people talking about being much more adaptable, being able to switch into different systems and to use different providers a lot more than they ever did before. So I think the mindset is changing a bit.
Eric, now having said that, where do you think the future technologies, or sorry, I would say, what technologies would you bet for the future in the industry? What's your punt?
So I would say I always lean, when I think about what will be adopted over a specific horizon in the future, I always lean toward things that are, you know, the tech world likes the word disruption, but the logistics world hates the word disruption, because disruption is a bad word, right? It's a volcano erupting, or it's a pandemic. It's a bad word. So I tend to think of things that are going to be get traction as things that are, that actually don't disrupt, but that they complement, or that they fill a gap. So, and that leads me to think things like hardware, whether it's drones or autonomous vehicles. Those are coming, but those require such a complete change of our physical world, right? It's changing out a fleet of trucks. It's moving from air cargo to sort of like, you know, micro fulfillment drones. And it's a total mindset, total strategy change. I think what I would bet on in the near term is more around process automation. So things that eliminate data entry roles, things that potentially even eliminate decision-making roles around, you know, which carrier do I use? Which 3PL do I use? Which place do I source, right? Those decisions. With, you know, systems that sort of either replace that or aid a decision maker to make those decisions. So I think the automation side of things from a programmatic perspective is going to take much more root in the near term over, you know, hardware things that are really like, big transformations of physical assets.
Eric, there's also a regulatory constraint in our country, at least, if you talk about drones and stuff like that. There are certain areas where they're far more strategic, or we call it as far more integral to country's defense as well. We had some drone attacks as well in India from across the border, or certain reconnaissance of using drones. So I believe it would be a bit difficult for drones to become mainstream, even in our last mile delivery in our country, even far more strategic and far more integral to our country's defense and safety. What's your point of view? Do you see the same things happening across the world, that countries don't want to allow drones, want to use it only for defense and very strategic purposes rather than getting it into mainstream?
Well, so I have to caveat, I am not a futurist. So I have a hard time seeing where things are 10 years from now. Probably that's a good thing sometimes, because I feel like I'm more pragmatic.
Force you to think.
Yeah, right. But I think where we've definitely seen success in terms of drone activity is controlled environments. So a warehouse, I'm hearing lots of interesting use cases for drones inside of a warehouse or inside of a controlled facility, even if it's outdoors, right? And then areas where you have a remote population that is not well served by other, you know, roads or rail, right? Where literally the only way or the best way to serve them is through some sort of aerial device, right? So there's lots of interesting use cases around that. The question is, how many use cases are there for that? And does that filter into sort of like big metropolitan areas where even if you don't have a neighbor who's a little antagonistic to you, just the idea of lots of drones flying all over the place, I think throws a lot of people off. And I think you're right. There's a whole policy regulatory aspect to it that's very hard to overcome.
I guess up till now, what I've seen the application of drones is in some closing ceremony or the opening ceremony of a sporting event where all the drones had to fly and they showed all the lights around and did some formations. So it's more of a Republic Day aircraft formations over Delhi. That's where I saw a real application of drones on television.
Or maybe to replace the spider cam over the cricket matches, right? So
that's correct.
Yeah. The controlled environments, though.
Of them broken also.
Yeah.
By the ball.
Yeah. That's right.
Great. I wanted to just provoke a few things in terms of the manpower shortages in the industry, which we saw was one of the backbone to run the industry, which got disrupted. Is this something of a serious talent issue in the industry, or is it that we have not planned for the growth of industry that we are seeing talent shortages? Whether it's drivers, there are a whole host of areas or technicians, and that we are seeing a huge shortage, which is also leading to disruption.
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think I'll answer this in two parts. There's the current issue, which is that a lot of the jobs that are available, even if they're good paying jobs, are not necessarily seen as desirable jobs. So truck drivers, at least, you know, I track the trucking industry really closely in the US. There's a shortage in that the pay and the quality of life has not necessarily been what would attract people to that industry over, say, a construction job or some other sort of labor related job. Same with warehouse workers. There is a shortage of warehouse workers because driving a forklift, moving boxes is not seen by some as the greatest job in the world. And yet we're ordering more stuff than ever online. And correct. So the demand for those types of jobs is higher than it's ever been, right? So there is a mismatch in that regard. I think this becomes an even bigger issue in the future where, you know, we talked a little bit about technology, where more logistics jobs are geared directly around technology. So it's not just that you work in a warehouse or drive a truck. It's you work in a warehouse, you drive a truck, and you need to be really adept at working with a bot that's trailing around after you, or you have to manage 5 different systems inside of your truck. Or maybe you're in an office and you're a data scientist. You're not a data entry person, right? So the skills required in the future, I think, are going to be way above what they are today. In the States, we actually, there's been in the last 10 years, there's been a huge number of supply chain technology related programs that have emerged. So it's not hard to get the academic schooling in this industry, way more than it ever has before. But the question is, are those programs turning out the talent that the industry needs? Is there enough of them? I definitely think the workforce in logistics is going to change. The makeup of it is going to change a lot over the next few years as more, you know, machine learning and AI starts to take over things that people used to do.
For the audience information, in India, one of the last mile delivery company food space, Zomato, which went IPO, has over 160,000 people, and their competitor is almost the same, which I've already written about it in one of my blogs. And if you see, the whole industry has just mushroomed during the pandemic itself, where we understand that over 2 million jobs requirements are there, and we're not able to fill that much of delivery boys and in our country itself. So that's at the most lowest level of job with low skills, where we are seeing a huge shortage. Absolutely. Given that the pandemic required a lot of last mile delivery and that whole industry mushroomed, we had to probably think about, you know, ways and means of how to efficiently use the same manpower. And I'm sure that's a great, you know, use case using tech to solve the issue.
Well, that's an issue where, I mean, this is on every mode of goods transport, whether it's a Zomato or a Pidge driver, you know, delivering your food from a restaurant, all the way to a large truck carrying, you know, a huge volume of freight. Is optimizations are needed at almost every single level, right? You need to minimize empty miles. You need to aggregate orders. You need to be predictive in where orders are likely to come from, so that you're using all of these resources, whether it's human or the vehicle itself, to its optimal best. And then the other issue with that optimization issue is the optimization can't be in a silo. The optimization needs to work with other optimizations, right? If you have a predictive system that's great at telling you when a person is likely to make an order, but the route optimization that the driver uses is not connected to that, then that's not going to be optimal. So all of these individual optimizations need to be connected with each other as well. So it's a really challenging thing, but you're right. This is where tech can kind of overcome maybe a resource deficiency.
Well, I just exited Ola, which is a point-to-point transportation business model competing with Uber. Yep. And we've again have the same issues, especially in a city like Bombay, where it's a north-south traffic movement on the peaks. Again, availability of drivers and vehicles at one point where there's a demand on during the peak hours when the movement is there.
All going under.
Absolutely. Yep. Absolutely. And I'm sure this is the same issue on the logistics side as well. And, you know, you have then the peak and off-peak hour pricing just to balance the supply and demand. So the industry has kind of geared up. Somebody wants it, time and place value, pays more. Doesn't want time and place value, opts for a lower priority.
That's right. That's great.
I wanted to talk to you about a few innovations that have happened during the time of our pandemic. And closer home, we had the oxygen supply during our second wave of COVID, and a huge mobilization of logistics occurred to move oxygen from place of production to the households and the hospitals in the cities and across the country. And I'm sure these sort of innovations, you would have seen a lot across the world as well. We used trucks to come onto a rail track, and you know, on a mass transit green zone, they were moved from one city or one zone to another where the oxygen was supplied. And this, you mind you, this was an innovative idea which led to making the demand supply of oxygen available at a time of crisis for the patients. Have you seen such events? They are not breakthrough innovations, but this is the need of the hour in the logistic industry to really think out of the box to ensure how mass transit and mass movement of goods and supplies in an area of surplus to an area of shortage could happen very rapidly.
Yeah.
Have you seen such innovations or ideas across the world which you can relate, where we can take back to our industry?
Well, you know, actually, I think the situation a few months ago here was quite an interesting case study, because the world was definitely not just watching, but helping, right? I knew of tons of freight forwarders in US and Europe that were chartering flights and sending, you know, their excess supply as well here. I think the big picture is that crisis tends to bring innovation, right? You know, moments of desperation bring, what is it? Necessity is the mother of invention, right? So, you know, I think to a certain extent, it showed constraints of a system, which every economy operates under some constraints, but also the power of kind of problem solving when some of those constraints are removed and you start to think freely about, oh, if we aren't limited by this and this, we can do this. And that, you know, logistics practitioners by their nature tend to be sort of problem solving people. They like to fix problems, right? And so I think that was a really good example of this industry sort of rising to the task. It happened really all at various points throughout COVID in different regions, right? I mean, there were people rushing goods into China at the outset, then rushing goods from China into other regions where they had issues. The other thing I'll mention, you know, in terms of innovation that's interesting is I actually think WhatsApp, you know, we're talking about tech and all this, but I actually think WhatsApp was incredibly valuable during the oxygen situation in India. I was personally involved in quite a few different WhatsApp conversations and just sort of observing what was going on, and people were coordinating goods moving from areas where there was excess to areas where there was a deficit through WhatsApp, you know, so that was essentially the system of record.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, I think what we saw was, you know, logistics practitioners are sort of by their nature problem solvers and they like to fix things. And I think we saw that where early on in China, where there was issues, people were sending the things that needed to be sent to China to deal with the pandemic early on there, and then quickly reversing course, and China, things were being sent from China to other markets, right? And we saw that repeat as the pandemic unfolded. So I think it just sort of underscored that. The other thing I'll mention is, you know, we've talked a lot about technology. I actually think the most important technology during this whole pandemic, especially in India, for the last, you know, that in spring was WhatsApp. I was personally on a number of, you know, WhatsApp threads where a whole bunch of coordination was happening, getting goods that were in excess in one area to where they were in deficit in another area. So in a sense, WhatsApp was sort of acting as the system of record between all of these parties that aren't normally connected to one another. So it just shows, you know, innovation comes in. It doesn't have to be in an AI based optimization system. It can be a simple communication platform too, where innovation can happen.
Yeah. And I think that leads to multi solutions that were very imperative, and the need for it is very imperative than never before. And I guess WhatsApp is just one of the solutions people have put up. We call this as the Jugaad in
That's
India.
Right. Jugaad.
Yeah, Jugaad innovation in India.
Yep.
But what is it that you are seeing in terms of the innovation and advances in this space?
In visibility?
Yes.
So I sort of have a love-hate relationship with visibility. I've been writing about it and covering it for so long that it, to a certain extent, I feel it's always going to be what everyone wants from visibility is always going to be a year or two into the future. And it's always that way. It's been that way for 15 years. But it does feel like there's a little bit of actual progress happening on that front. The problem is historically, visibility has been very fragmented between modes. So you could get good trucking visibility, or you could get good ocean freight visibility, or you could get visibility, you know, in a particular region that was good, but not across all of the regions that you move goods. It feels like there's starting to be some movement around really making that a less of a problem. And then the other issue was just sort of data accuracy. It was great to start to get data around your goods in transit, but if, you know, say 10, 15% of that data was a little bit off, was it inaccurate, or it came a day too late, it really started to make the entirety of your visibility platform less valuable. You need it closer to 100% so you can count on any individual piece of information. So that, you know, it does feel like there's a lot of headway that's being made on that front. So stitching together modes, stitching together, you know, global geographies, and then making the data more real time and more accurate. There's just a lot of progress on that. So, you know, I think in the next few years, we'll start to see it be even more valuable than it's been in the past.
Eric, constraint I wanted to talk was the cold chain in India.
Mm.
Especially there were doubt about movement of vaccine to the whole masses across the length and breadth of the country. In fact, I wrote about it as well. And, you know, I studied the cold chain in India when I was working with Grubdanon to launch dairy in India, the dairy products in India through the Indian subsidiary. And one of the issues that we understood, you know, the last mile cold chain, a lot of infrastructure had to be invested into. And guys like the PepsiCo and the Coca-Cola obviously had taken a head way. We still see this whole cold chain issue a nightmare in our country. How do you think we are going to work around this? And are you seeing this happening in other emerging countries as well?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, I lived in India. I was working from here from 07 to 2012. And I can recall at that point, you know, this issue being cited as one that was just going to be a massive challenge. You know, I think for the most part, it was nothing to do with vaccines back then. It was perishable goods, right? There was so much spillage and wastage, right? And if you could solve that, it was good for the environment. It was good for, you know, the producers, great for the consumers. I mean, I think in 10 years, I don't know how much progress has actually been made relative to the number of challenges, right? The challenges seem to get more numerous, and progress sort of tracks against those challenges, but there's always challenges that sort of surpass it. I think this is an issue of, well, first of all, the climate here is just, you know, it's really difficult to deal with. The number of people that need perishable products, it's a big opportunity, but it's such a massive challenge that no other country with this climate faces. And then so the cost.
When I was part of the Prime Minister's Task Force for Food and Agri Reform in 1998, annually India would lose 55,000 crores worth of perishable agri products.
Yeah.
A recent report mentioned that we have been able to save about 10,000 crores of perishable products. So still lose of perishable products because of lack of processing and cold chain in India.
Yeah. Yeah. It's expensive. It's expensive. And so, I mean, I'll give you an example. In the U.S., it's a massive challenge and opportunity in the U.S. as well. But what's happened is there's one company that's actually taken a more than 50% share of the cold chain facility market, a company called Lineage Logistics. And they've basically consolidated that industry. And it will be interesting to see whether they, in that dominant position, they operate in other countries too. It's not just in the U.S. Whether that dominant position allows them to sort of take out some of the inefficiencies that individual operators kind of struggle with. I don't know if you'll ever get to that point in India where there's one operator that has a dominant position like that, but it's a huge cost. That's the reality. Is I think the cost of running and setting up that cold chain, you know, network in the country has been more than what it costs to let things sort of spoil, right? So unless it makes sense financially, economically, it's hard to justify those investments, right?
Audience perspective, what India loses in a year would be sufficient enough to vaccinate our whole country for COVID. That's the value of we don't have a proper cold chain and logistics and processing in India.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, the opportunity is here and there, that for sure.
Moving on, I would love to now talk about, you know, how is the maturity of various solutions? I keep getting presentations after presentations and analyst reports talking about, hey, this is great and this and that. But when we try to integrate it with our existing solutions, whether it's in our investee companies or in some of us, that the whole integration of these tech solutions and new age technology that keeps coming in, and you mentioned about to kind of, you know, upgrade some of the solutions in technology, in logistics. How is the industry going to move? Are not able to get replaced, or the technology is not compatible to the newer age innovations that's coming in?
Yeah, I mean, adoption is, it's a big problem. There's one thing that's happened in the last, you know, 5 to 10 years is there's just been a lot of investment into this industry. So there's a lot of solutions. The number of solutions that are available to, say, a cargo owner or a 3PL or a carrier are so much more numerous than they were even a decade ago. So there's lots of different options. I think to a certain extent, all of those options can be a bit of a problem, in that it can create an issue where people get very confused about what to invest in before you can even get to the adoption phase. But you're right. I think one of the things that's really tricky is, you know, there's a cliche that most supply chains are run on Excel, right? And that every technology, first and foremost, is competing with Excel, not a competitor. So that's a problem, in that people are comfortable with something that does the job, even if it's not doing it optimally. They're comfortable with doing it, and they're really reluctant to break something if it's not truly broken. So this gets back to the mindset. You have to have a mindset that you're going to be looking out at where you want your organization to be in 2 to 3 years. And, you know, if you're in the business of selling solutions, it comes down to this. I think you need to be able to quickly determine whether the company that you're talking to has that mindset or not. Because if they don't have that mindset, you're going to end up spending a lot of time selling into an organization that is eventually not going to, you know, adopt what you're trying to sell. And I think, you know, after 5 to 10 years now of all of these new companies that have come into the market, I think they're probably really good at figuring out, you know, is there something that this potential customer is saying that tells me that they are not going to be adopting us in the next year, right? And that's really the key. You cannot waste precious resources chasing a customer that does not want to change. I think that the flip side of that is there are so many customers to chase that it's not, you don't have a small number of people that could potentially be customers. So the key is to move off of the customer that isn't going to buy your service or your technology and move to one that is. That's the key.
Well, the issue of total cost of ownership all comes in. And from a certain technology or integrate the technology, the total cost of ownership as a sum total should come down, rather than seeing that happen in at least in 3 of the industries where I invest, or 4 of the industries where I invest or I continue to invest. So technology ownership, it's the cost and the benefits do not kind of match up. How do we then push that in an investment into innovation so that it's becoming cheaper, better, faster as a value proposition for the industry to adopt from the logistics industry as a solution?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I think a lot of early companies into this cycle were identifying a problem that they thought was a widespread problem, and it was actually a pretty narrow problem. And the TCO issue might be there for a few companies, but it's not there at scale, right? So I think the key there is getting early founders, early solutions providers, and their investors closer to a range of potential customers for which this is a big fix for a problem. So it's really looking, and you know, this is an issue, because for a small startup, the best way to get traction is to focus on a narrow solution to a specific pain point, get really strong at that, and then build out from there. But problem is, if you only solve one very, you know, specific problem for a narrow set of customers, you can never scale the way that an investor wants you to. So I think in logistics, what's interesting is you can have a bunch of different types of companies that sell completely different products, but they have common pain points. There's a specific process that cuts across all of their companies. And that's the challenge, is to find that thing that is common across a bunch of different verticals and create the horizontal solution to it. So I think the more that early stage companies and their investors can get access to a broader range of kind of potential customers, the better they'll be able to find that solution that cuts across those verticals instead of just being really, really good for 10 customers and not very good for anybody else.
Eric, I want to shift gears and talk about money supply to the industry. Seen a lot of disruption just because the money supply that is the engine to the logistics industry as well as to their customers was in real short supply during the pandemic. And obviously, there are not many solutions here apart from the banks and NBFCs in India. And also the government allowing for certain waivers to fund this whole engine in terms of incentives and whatever you. Do you think that it's time that we should probably look at fintechs also entering into the logistics era?
So this is definitely something we're seeing in other regions, right? Where there's, you know, either fintech companies are looking at the logistics industry is something where there's a lot of potential, or you're seeing, you know, technology companies figure out a fintech angle to what they're doing, right? And that's to tether, you know, the movement of goods to, as I mentioned at the beginning, the movement of goods to financing of those goods, right? So correct. I think it's funny you bring this up because, you know, this issue of supply, because in the US right now, the problem is the opposite. Everyone is complaining that money is too easy to get for all types of companies. And, you know, they're worried about a bubble kind of being created. And it's not everybody. I think some people see a big difference between today and, you know, say 2000. Investors are much more rational. Investors are much more, there's a lot more diligence. They understand the industry a lot better. But, you know, it's not every day there's a new company that's getting a funding round in the States. And so, you know, in terms of monetary supply here in India, I think the problem is this is just my perception from the outside looking in, is the structure of the industry is still so fragmented that if I'm going to invest into this space, I want to see a path toward consolidating a little bit of it. You know, not necessarily the whole industry, that's impossible, but consolidating enough where, you know, a business can scale. And whether fintech is the one to make that happen, it's very possible that that is, because I can remember hearing a founder here a few years ago tell me that every freight forward in India is actually, only thing they're doing is moving money from one side to another. That's the biggest function they do. It's not buying capacity on a ship. It's not finding a truck. It's taking money from over here and deploying it somewhere else over here, right? So, you know, there probably is room for fintech to take a larger role.
Great. You talked about private equity investment in the industry at an all-time high. Say it's an inverted thing here. There's a lot of money now chasing more mature companies. We are going to be seeing an IPO. But at the bottom, the startups are still struggling to raise capital in India as well. In India, is a bit slow, especially after last year's pandemic. It's kind of slow. And I'm seeing the deal flows not really leading to an investment. There's a lot of deals, but it's not fructifying into investment into the startups or early stage companies in India. But who can take a risk in early stage to see that there are further growth stories and unicorns coming out, maybe in the next few years? To take a punt in the logistics tech early stage so that they can definitely see some emerging business models in the next few years.
Well, I mean, I think there's a couple things. I think, you know, I talked to a good number of early stage founders here, and they all, every single one of them that I've talked to has a level of domain expertise that is very strong. So they understand, they are not just coming in thinking there's a problem to solve. I need to figure out what the problem is. I also need to figure out the tech to solve it. They're coming in going, I've spent 10, 20, 25 years in this space. I know exactly what's broken. I'm going to, you know, align myself with the programming engineering team to fix that problem. So I think there's a real good alignment between expertise and problem solving. And, you know, the scale of the problem here is such that there can be a lot of differentiation. I think one of the problems in the US and in Europe is that the logistics networks, people like to complain, but the logistics networks are pretty efficient. They run really well. You know, the roads are smooth for most point. Things run on time for the most part. Not this year. This year, everything has been broken. But so if you invest in a technology, you may be getting an incremental benefit. In India, I think if you invest in the right technology, you could be getting a massive benefit, a massive competitive edge over the existing players, or you could be helping to enable those existing players to get a competitive edge against their competitors. So I think the ability to sort of differentiate is that much bigger if you invest in the right solution.
Excellent. Eric, I want to talk a little bit about the issue of sustainability. You see, in one of my blogs, and this is a company called Zomato, which just had a very successful IPO. I wouldn't call it successful, but here's some statistics. They run 4 billion kilometers a year in this country. They release about 186 million kilos of carbon in our environment, and around 80 million liters of fuel is being used by their bikers to do the last mile delivery. And this is just one company, and we have multiple such companies. How do you sensitize the industry to be much more sustainable and green?
Well, this is a challenge all over, obviously.
And now we don't have Trump at White House, so I'm sure you know this whole agenda of sustainability and other things will be far more active.
Stronger, yeah. Well, so I think there's two elements to this. So it depends on the industry. So if you're looking at, let's take the container shipping industry, where there's a limited number of suppliers into that industry, right? I think the bulk of the responsibility, I won't say the bulk, but a lot of the responsibility falls on the suppliers in that type of industry, where they need to collectively decide they are going to make massive changes to, you know, not just the fuels they use, not just, you know, the routes that they take, but making sure that they're running as efficiently as possible. And that obviously means working with their customers and working with their intermediaries to facilitate that. But Zomato, last mile trucking industries, both in India and Europe and the US, they're so fragmented, and it's not about controlling 10 suppliers and then you've solved the problem. It's in how do you make the consumer of those services force the supplier to change their behavior? And I think, you know, from a large freight perspective, you're starting to see that. There's companies now that are saying, we have environmental mandates that are far beyond anything we've ever done before. We are going to be a greener company. And that means that the suppliers we work with, whether a trucking company or a last mile delivery company, need to align with that. What does that mean? I think it means forcing them to move to assets that are more environmentally friendly. I think it means, back to the optimization issue, forcing them to invest in optimization that helps them reduce empty miles and to aggregate orders, right? Whether it's Zomato delivering, you know, things to people's houses, or trucks delivering goods from a port to a, you know, distribution center, right? So, and there's a whole bunch of other things. I mean, there's everything from, you know, if you're a large multinational and you're sourcing from one country to another, are you using the total route that has the lowest carbon footprint? Or are you going to your favorite port because they move your container faster and you get a lower rate from point A to point B through that port, but it's actually much more environmentally unfriendly to use that port versus one that's closer to your final destination. So there's no one single solution, and there's no one single entity that can control this. It's like everybody has to be sort of demanding more of each other, and they need to individually be figuring out solutions that can work to improve the problem.
You talked about consolidation at various times in our talk, and I think that it's time that the industry has to start consolidating to get the scale and other benefits. Where do you think you'll see a lot of activity in the next few years to come?
You know, it's a great question, and I'm not really sure I have a good answer. I think the theory about, say, 7 years ago, that venture capitalists investing into this industry, I think they thought there was an Uber type opportunity, and not necessarily the exact business model of Uber, but there was the opportunity to become the name brand associated with a certain type of service. So, you know, you mentioned Flexport. I think Flexport, SoftBank invested $1 billion into Flexport. They did not invest $1 billion into Flexport to be, you know, one of 25 freight forwarders that moves goods from Asia to the US or from Asia to Europe. They invested in them presumably to take a dominant role in the market that they're in. The problem is technology creates democratization. And so even if there's a bunch of companies that don't adopt technology and get sort of wiped away or acquired because a Flexport or a Shipwaves is more efficient than they are, you have a whole bunch of other companies that adopt technology and all of a sudden can improve their own capability in terms of serving customers, in terms of operational efficiency. They can get really good really quickly using technology, and that helps them stay in the game. And you can even have a new company that's not necessarily quote unquote a digital forwarder, but a new 3PL, say, that adopts, you know, a bunch of different enablement platforms, a visibility platform, a quoting platform, a CRM, and they can use those tools and really sort of scale up quite quickly themselves. So I think we're moving from one form of fragmentation to another form of fragmentation. And I'm not sure that's great for consolidation, except maybe down the road, but probably not as quickly as it needs to happen.
That's a great answer, Eric. Last question, and I want to get your thoughts on. You know, COVID is a great reset to a lot of things that was good or bad to the world. If we were to just press the reset button to the whole logistics industry, what would be your vision of the logistic and tech industry?
That's a great question. That's a tough one to end on.
Thank you.
Well, so
Eric, I've enjoyed talking to you. So
yeah, no, this has been a great chat. I think so. If we could sort of wave a magic wand and reset things, I think we would do away with a lot of sort of spreadsheet 1990s, early 2000s based software architecture. And, you know, magically people, not only would they not exist, but people would have no memory of them existing. And that, getting that sort of clutter out of the way and that dependency on those things would open up their minds to adopt what's being developed right now, which is, you know, I'm not going to say that the things that are being developed right now are transformational and revolutionary. I see them as just, they are evolutionary. They're much better versions of what, you know, people in the past have worked on. The software is better now. It's cheaper. It's easier to implement. There's just the burdens and barriers to adoption are less with current software architecture. So if we could wipe away all of the things that existed, say pre-2015, 2010, and wiped away people's memories of relying upon those, I think we'd be in a really interesting position right now, because you'd have a lot more people that were open-minded about what they could adopt right now and not worrying about, oh, well, I have this existing system and we've invested a lot into it and everyone knows how to use it and it's not really broken. So I'm just going to keep relying on this.
So what you're saying is a man in black who comes and erases the whole memory of the logistics industry. And then we have the Star Wars, where we have a new technology to move people and things intergalactically.
I don't want to wipe away all their memory, just the memory of like the systems they use. I still want their experience and their problem solving and knowing and all the relationships they have. So just part of their memory, not all of it.
Eric, it's really a pleasure talking to you and provoking thoughts as a person who I have regarded very much. I really thank you to spending time with us. Sorry for the delays of the tech and whatever we have faced. And I wish you a pleasant stay in India and look forward to interacting with you. Before I go, a few announcements for our listeners. We like to thank our sponsors, our team, for making it possible. We are going to be back next month with our episodes of Quote Unquote with KK. So stay tuned. Thanks and have a nice day.